been discussed has been the rise of marijuana moms. Marijuana moms. Or mothers smoking marijuana. Not everybody real happy about this. They're thinking there is an issue, especially in smoking marijuana and breastfeeding and various other issues here. And joining me is Dr. Keith Cantor. He's a nutritionist. He's CEO of the Nutritional Addiction Mitigation Eating and Drinking Program. And he's also written some books. Let me just touch on some of the books that that he's written. What Matters, Leadership Values That Just Might Save America, as well as the award-winning new children's book, The Green Box League of Nutritious Justice. All right, Dr. Cantor, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay, so I have not heard of this trend, this growing trend of marijuana moms. Could you break that down a bit? Is this happening only in the states, such as Oregon and Colorado, other places that have legalized it, or just a growing trend in general?
It's a growing trend, you know, assuming that it's true. And I read a bunch of articles yesterday on it, and one of them said 59% of moms that have teenage children smoke marijuana.
15,
that's what it said, you know.
Okay.
And these were from fairly reliable sources. One of them was Fox News. So, you know, you're talking about pretty reliable sources. They seem high to me, but it's a very, very bad trend.
Yeah, well, I suppose it might be, you know, you're counted as smoking if, okay, yes, I've done it, or are we talking about routine consumption of cannabis?
They were talking about routine consumption.
Oh, okay, all right.
And it's spreading over the country because, you know, it's legal in a lot of places, and they have medical marijuana in even more places. Mm-hmm. But if you have the time, let me explain it. Marijuana has THC in it.
Sure.
Okay. It's 50 times stronger than when I was a kid. 50, the TH in marijuana. So what people don't understand is drugs and alcohol are a disease. It's not a choice. So when people take drugs, including marijuana or alcohol, on a regular basis, what happens is it stimulates the opiate receptors, which are cells we have, clusters of cells we have in our brain, our spinal cord, and our gastrointestinal tract. And they release chemicals that go to the frontal cortex, which is the top of the brain.
Is that the pleasure center?
No, but it'll release the dopamine, which goes to the pleasure center.
Okay.
And then it gives you good memories. And then if you're doing it on a regular basis, glutenate is released, which is what makes all those little nicks and crevices that you see in the pictures of the brain, and those are your memories. And it's going back and forth as you smoke it, or in this case, as you take the drugs or alcohol, in this case, marijuana. And the frontal cortex is supposed to be the smart part of the brain. That's where we can make decisions and we could weigh options, etc. The midbrain, which is the pleasure center, that's the part where, you know, you move your hand away from fire. You run because something's happening. It's an instant decisions. And that's the pleasure center. And what happens is, over time, because the stuff's going back and forth, the dopamine's going down and the glutenate's going up, it eventually takes over. And all of a sudden, that pleasure is equal to survival. And we always correlate that to the heavier drugs like opioids or even alcohol. But the same is true with marijuana. If you smoke it enough, your midbrain, which is the pleasure center, says, okay, I need this. This pleasure, it equals survival to me. So they'll do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do. That's why they rob stuff and steal stuff, you know, to get more money for the drugs.
The pleasure then becomes the need, and that's really what the addiction is then.
That's right. That's the addiction. We broke down the frontal cortex so it doesn't have the free will to weigh the options and emotions and giving it, and it's just reacting to the pleasure center, and it goes through a stress cycle that is supposed to be the mitigator, and the stress cycle gives up once you smoke enough or do enough. So it is addicting. and they can say whatever they want, and I smoked marijuana when I was a kid, but like I said, now it's 50 times stronger.
And so that we're necessarily having 50 times more problems. And I've lost these kind of arguments here as far as the voters have been concerned. Oregon voters voted both for medical and then for recreational marijuana, approved a couple of years ago. I guess my point being, though, is it's 50 times stronger. Okay, I guess that means that you really don't have to consume as much of it.
That's right.
But do you have any real evidence that we're having serious problems because of it? I don't consume cannabis myself, all right? So, that's not really a matter. So I don't have a dog in this fight personally. I know many people who do, and everybody, the ones I do know, seem to be operating or going through life in a relatively successful fashion, and most of the people I've known, they've used it occasionally, much like some other people might use a glass of wine after a hard day's work. And I've known other people who suffer chronic pain, and medical cannabis has helped them quite dramatically in some cases.
Well, I think there are some uses for medical marijuana, but when I think it was Colorado took the THC out of the medical marijuana because that wasn't needed, the sales dropped 97.2%, and they had to put the THC back in. So the people wanted to get high. They didn't want it just for the medical purposes, because it does help with like hunger, if you can't eat, and appetite. But I work with a lot of addiction centers, and some of the people there are there for marijuana addiction. So it is an addictable drug, just like heroin. Now we have a big opioid epidemic, and they used to call it a gateway drug. You start with marijuana, then you move to uppers.
Yeah, there was a gateway. You start smoking weed, and all of a sudden you're going to be a heroin addict.
That's right, but now that's not true, because the weed is strong enough to do it by itself. So some people could control it, just like they do the alcohol. I'll have an occasional glass of wine, probably 2, 3, even 4 a week, and it's fine. Some people, they do that, and then they're having 2, 3, 4, 5 glasses a day, and it becomes a problem.
So the marijuana mums, as they're termed here, do you believe as a nutritionist that this is a problem? Because you're about changing diet in order to reduce the addiction quotient in someone's life. Isn't
yes.
That what your purpose is?
It's definitely a problem from not only an addiction standpoint, but a health standpoint. When you stimulate the opiate receptors, one of the things that happens is it throws off your insulin mechanism. And when it throws off your insulin mechanism, it either gives you a craving for more sugar, or it doesn't give you the craving, but it has all your cells drop the sugar. So, which has the same effect, and then you get the craving after you run out of the sugar. And that causes diabetes type 2. We know it's on the rise. 40% of people will have diabetes type 2, will be pre-diabetic by 2020. And the main cause of that is inflammation. And inflammation is taking things that really acidity is what causes inflammation. But when you throw off the insulin mechanism, then you're taking in more sugar, which is very acidic, and that throws off inflammation. And the CDC says that inflammation adversely affects 85% of all diseases. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, 85% of them. So from a health point of view, it's very bad. Speaking as a PhD in nutritional science, it's very bad for you.
Okay, so you're saying that this rise in marijuana moms, the marijuana smoking mothers, is actually self-medication for depression, undiagnosed depression, or just a mild form of it?
That's what they claim in the articles that I read, but inflammation is bad for depression, and what you have to do is, first of all, have a therapist, but you have to take foods that don't cause depression. If you're eating foods that are releasing cortisol, which is what inflammation does, cortisol is the fight or flight thing that puts you in that mode that the saber-toothed tiger is coming. You're either going to fight it or run away from it.
And yeah, what's an example of a food that releases cortisol?
Well, let me go backwards. What you need is serotonin and melatonin.
Okay.
And the foods that you need for those are complex carbohydrates like vegetables and, you know, cruciferous vegetables, but vegetables, fruits.
Cruciferous, the cauliflowers, the broccoli, things like that.
Cabbage. That's right.
Okay, interesting.
And those are good to, for the serotonin and melatonin, and they help stop the cortisol. But cortisol is caused by stress.
Okay.
So the other thing that stops it is to not get stressed out. So meditation, Pilates, yoga, regular exercise, doing something fun, having a hobby, playing with the kids, all of that will stop the cortisol from being released. Because
so you'd recommend that rather than sparking a bull, right?
That's right.
Okay. Dr. Keith Kantor is with me, and by the way, his website is Dr. Keith, K-E-I-T-H, Kantor, K-A-N-T-O-R.com.
And just so you know, the other one that's more specifically on drugs and alcohol is namedprogram.com, N-A-M-E-D, program.com.
Named Program, and this is about using nutrition then to break the addiction cycle.
Yeah, what I do is, what the menus do in the Named Program is, they give you healthy foods, but they make sure that none of them stimulate the opiate receptors, which then stimulates the dopamine. So I make sure that none of the foods stimulate the opiate receptors, like sugar, like...
let me ask you, this may be a dumb question, I hope not, but Dr. Kantor, when you talk about foods that stimulate the opiate sensors, or receptors in your body, I eat Hostess Twinkies, let's say.
They stimulate the opiate receptors, because sugar stimulates it.
All right, okay. So that's why you eat a sugary thing instead of satisfying you, it just really makes you want to have more sugar.
Well, that, but what happens is if you look at, go to any AA meeting or NA meeting, what you want to do is set up a booth outside selling, you know, Snickers and cigarettes, because everybody's smoking cigarettes and eating sugary things, and they're doing that to transfer the addiction. While they're not taking the alcohol or the drugs, they're using something else that'll stimulate the opiate receptors and give them the dopamine release that they want, and that's why there's an 85% relapse rate.
All right. Let's talk with Carol. Carol's in Gold Hill. You have a question for Dr. Keith Kantor. Go right ahead.
Yes, I do. Are you familiar with hemp oil from with the CBD and hemp oil? It's not, doesn't make you high, doesn't do any of those things. But
no, hemp doesn't have THC in it.
Right.
So that's different. That's not stimulating the opiate receptors.
Well, my point is, apparently, it's growing very rapidly. In fact, there was an article in the Mail Tribune about they're growing it around here in Oregon. The hemp, just for the oil, which doesn't have all those properties, but has the same or even better healing properties than the marijuana.
But here's the problem, Carol.
Okay.
That was your name, right? Carol?
Yes.
Okay. When they try to take the THC out of the marijuana for the medical marijuana, the sales plummeted. So what it is most of the people, in my opinion, that are taking the medical marijuana supposedly for medical reasons aren't, because what do they need the THC for? They want to get high. The hemp oil doesn't have it, so those people are being serious and they're taking it for medical reasons.
I agree with you on that. I was just saying, I wonder, you know, I'm getting to the side of promoting the CBD.
All right. Thank you for that, Carol. We appreciate it. I want to make sure Jerry gets his question in here, too. Dr. Kantor, Jerry, go right ahead, please.
Yes. Although I haven't had it for 30 or some years, I have smoked pot hundreds of times, hundreds of people, and it has always been excellent.
It's always what?
What he has to say about that, Jerry. Dr. Kantor, Jerry says it's always been a choice for him, not...
How long ago was it?
Oh, 30 years.
Okay, so did I. I'm 62 years old. It's been more for me. I stopped before I went into the Marines. So I smoked marijuana when I was in my teens, up to my late teens. Then I went into the Marines as an officer, and I figured it wasn't fair to smoke marijuana at night and then arrest the guys during the day for smoking marijuana. So I stopped. But when we were smoking it, Jerry, it was 1/50th as strong. Think of it. You needed one or two joints to get high. Now they need one or two totes to get high. So what they did is through cross-pollination and, you know, however they did it to make it stronger, there's 50 times as much THC in it, which is the active ingredient that makes you high. So it's different, because I smoked, you know, hundreds of times when I was a kid, and it was always a choice. Now it's different because they made it so much stronger. I mean, think of it like they added a little heroin to the marijuana.
Good call there. All right, Dr. Cantor, I'm just out of time for the hour here. I think it's interesting, this program you talked about, the named program in which you are advocating, instead of just numbing yourself, actually changing nutritionally in order to fight addiction issues.
That's right. I'm actually vice president of NAMI, which is the National Association of Mental Illness. They consider substance abuse a mental illness. And I also use the menus for all the different mental illnesses like anxiety disorder, depression. And you have special menus for it. You have to work with a therapist also, but I could take care of the physical urges, and the therapist will take care of the mental reasons why you're doing either drugs or why you have anxiety or depression, etc. And the combination of them works great. And in the clinics that I work with for substance abuse that normally have an 85% relapse rate, when they do both, the physical with the food and the special water, I use a special hydroxide alkaline water called Aqua OH that gets rid of the inflammation. When you use both of them together, my relapse rate was below 50%.
So considerably better there.
Still too high, but better.
Yeah, but better. NamedProgram.com. That's the website where people could find out more about this specific issue we were talking about.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Can we have you back on for a longer segment at some point? I'd like to be able to take a few more calls.
Definitely.
Yeah, a bit more into it, because I know this cuts against the grain of the cannabis ethos, which is pretty much you know, a big deal, you know, in the state of Oregon. It's great to have an alternative viewpoint on this, Dr. Cantor.
Anytime. Just call the person that you set it up with, and I'd gladly do it.